Is that A&A? MMA? Are they back and better than ever?
Absolutely not. It's just me, because Slim's down in Texas doing, like, whatever. So, just me here to bring you guys a little bit of MMA news, previews, all that good stuff. But, yeah, my partner in crime is not here this week. So, Slim, hope you're having fun, you little goofball. I'm going to hold down the ship for us. Sorry we didn't get a episode out to you guys last week. We would have liked to go over that Font and Garbrandt card, but had the week off, so me and Slim decided to go ahead and enjoy ourselves for the week. So, cut us a little bit of slack. We need a break too, all right? Nonetheless, you guys, I'm here to, like I said, give you some stuff going on in the MMA world. So, I think we can all kind of agree that the biggest thing that happened in MMA news this week, Tyron Woodley will be taking on Jake Paul on Showtime in a boxing match. You heard me right. That little backstage mix-up that they had before the Askren-Paul fight led to this. And now Tyron Woodley's going to get his shot to shut Jake Paul up. Me and Slim have already been talking shit about it. I'm telling you guys right now, he's picking Jake Paul. I'm going to go with Tyron Woodley, but yeah, man, that fight and the build-up to that fight and the press conferences, they just had a face-off today, and Jake Paul said, I'll double your purse if you win. If you lose, you got to donate your purse to my charity. So just already some head games being played there with the face-offs and stuff like that, but it's going to be fun. I got to tell you guys, I do think it's going to be fun to watch, and I ain't going to pay for it or nothing like that, but I will be watching. I didn't say I'm illegally streaming it, okay? But I'm going to be watching it. But what else we got here for some news for you guys? Carlos Condit versus Max Griffin. This was just announced today. That's going to be at UFC 264 on July 10th. So I'm pretty excited for that one. That'll be a good fight. Sorry. My gosh, it's going to be hard just doing this by myself, so work with me here, guys. But Marina Moroz was supposed to take on Manon Fiorro this weekend. Marina Moroz is out, and in steps the undefeated former LFA fighter, Tabitha Ritchie, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. It's going to be a really fun fight. I'm looking forward to breaking down that fight for you guys here a little bit later. In other news, Tito Ortiz just resigned from his Huntington Beach City Council. Said the job just wasn't working for him. Seemed like there was a little bit more going on behind the scenes, but yeah, not too sure about that one. Don't want to speculate too much. So Henan Fahea, if you guys remember, just fought Fabricio Werdum in that last PFL card. Very pissed off that he didn't get a rebooked fight. And you know, the more I think about it, the more I'd like to see that. I would like to see him get that rematch against Fabricio Werdum, and I'd like to see how that fight actually ends up going without the controversy. So I thought maybe the PFL should have actually rebooked that fight. He's mad about the lack of transparency they had, so also, I'm glad to announce Dana White said, well, he hinted towards a long-term health benefit type, like giving the fighters health benefits for after they get out of the UFC. So he said that should be coming soon, or speculated that it could be coming soon. I'm excited for the fighters to get that one. In other fight announcement news, Dustin Jacoby taking on Askar Mozarov. That's going to be on UFC Fight Night August 28th. That is going to be a banger of a fight. I can't wait for that one. So we have Manny Martinez making his much-anticipated UFC debut. He'll be taking on Jesse Strader. That's August 21st. And I think that's about all I got for you guys on the news side. Now, something I'm really excited to talk about. The Ultimate Fighter. We had our first episode this weekend, and it did not disappoint. I thought it was really fun. I'm already liking the dynamic between Volkanovski and Ortega. It just seems like it's going to be a fun season from the other little previews they put out. But to start the season, first fight of the year, we had Aaron Phillips taking on Andre Petroski. Aaron, I tweeted about it, and shout out to Aaron Phillips. He liked and retweeted my tweet, which, of course, go follow us on A&A MMA's Twitter. That's A, the word and, A underscore MMA. Go find us on Twitter and follow us, guys. We get some good tweets off. But, yeah, it was Andre Petroski against Aaron Phillips to start the fight. Both the guys, very tentative, it seemed like. I mean, the first 3 minutes kind of flew by, and it just seemed like they were just looking at each other the whole time. And then Petroski goes in, lands the takedown, which I felt like he should have been going for that whole time with his wrestling pedigree. Got the takedown on Aaron Phillips, and from that point proceeded to lock in a guillotine choke. It was a little bit of an unorthodox guillotine choke, but he got it nonetheless. That was with 4 minutes and 52 seconds left in the very first round. Andre Petroski with the first win of the season over Aaron Phillips. And then that set up next week's fight, which I'm really excited for. It's going to be, let me get dude's name on here real quick because I always mess up his last name. It's going to be Mitch Raposo, who's, he was the very first overall pick by Team Volkanovski. Mitch Raposo will be taking on Ludwig Shaolinan. Sorry if I said that wrong, but yeah, it's going to be an exciting fight next week. Make sure you guys tune in to The Ultimate Fighter. So far, it's been awesome. I think you guys will really enjoy this season, as I have so far with the first episode. All right, so let's go ahead and move now from news and a little bit of a review there to this upcoming weekend's UFC card. I don't have any other major events. This is all we kind of have until PFL comes back next week. But Slim and I will get an episode out before that for shout out to the sponsor PFL. So just be on the lookout for that early next week, guys. But let's go ahead and get into this little bit of a preview, solo preview for you guys. Starting with the very first fight of the night. Just getting it underway with a banger. In the lightweight division, it's Peru's Claudio Puelles taking on USA's Jordan Levitt. Puelles coming in with a record of 9-2. The Peruvian fighter, 5'11", only 25 years old with a 72-inch reach. Remember, Puelles did finish as the runner-up on Season 3 of The Ultimate Fighter Latin America. And I believe at that point, that was 2016. He's 25 now, so he was 21 years old when he was fighting in the finale of The Ultimate Fighter. And, he came up short there, lost via knockout to Martin Bravo, but since then looked great in the UFC. Locked in that knee bar in the third round against Felipe Silva, and then his last time out just completely dominated Marcos Mariano I believe the scorecards were like 30-25s across the board. I mean, it was a complete domination. Puelles, though, the things he does well is definitely his ground game. For just being a Brazilian jiu-jitsu brown belt, he has just outstanding submissions. Of his 9 wins, 7 by stoppage, with 5 by submission, 2 by knockout. I mean, when he goes out there, he tries getting it done quick. He doesn't like taking it to the distance. Last time out against Mariano, though, he did win by decision. But I think for Puelles, he needs to come out in this one and just immediately push the pace. Even if he has to unload the gas tank in the first round and a half, I think that's going to be his best time to get the win over Jordan Levitt. But it's the return of the Monkey King. Unorthodox, dominant, fun to watch, man. Just some of the ways to describe the Monkey King, Jordan Levitt, coming in 26 years old, 5'9", with a 71-inch reach. Undefeated so far. He's 8-0. Of course, he made his debut last December and had that 22-second slam knockout of Matt Wyman, where he just kind of picked him up and ran over into his corner, his own corner, and slammed Matt Wyman down and got that quick knockout. But this guy, man, just a submission specialist. He's got heel hooks, arm triangles, anaconda chokes. He's got a lot of different ways to get it done when he's on the ground. But outstanding wrestling. And while I think he's still a little bit green on the striking side, but the way he moves is just so unorthodox and kind of hard to get a grasp on his pace. I think that kind of gives him an advantage. So, man, I think this fight's going to be so fun to watch. It's kind of hard to call it because Puelles, I think he will have the striking advantage, and he's so good on the ground himself, where I think, you know, Levitt might be at a little bit of a disadvantage striking, but his wrestling is so good with his grappling or with his submissions as well. I think it's going to kind of give him the advantage on the ground. Just a tough one to call, but Jordan Levitt right now. Also, he is only one of 12 fighters to earn a knockout via a slam. It was the second quickest slam knockout of all time. And that was the fastest finish, that 22-second knockout, for a debuting lightweight in UFC history. So just a couple fun facts there. Levitt, right now, currently sitting as the minus 210 favorite over the plus 165 Claudio Puelles. I do think Puelles has a chance in this one, but I'm going with Levitt. I think this guy has a lot of potential. His ceiling's really, really high. A&A MMA agreeing with this one. Slim's also going with Jordan Levitt. Also, I forgot to tell you guys, me and Slim are now tied on our records going into this one. So we're right back at square one. I'm excited. We're kind of like at the halfway point of the year. So neck and neck so far. Keeping it nice and entertaining for you guys. A&A MMA going, though, with Jordan Levitt. All right, we now move from the 155 pound division down to the 145 pound featherweight division. Another fun scrap here. The Moroccan Youssef Zalal taking on USA's Sean Woodson. We'll start with Youssef Zalal, coming in with a record of 10-4, only 24 years old, 5'10 with a 75 inch reach, really long for the division. So of course, when he came into the UFC, man, just looked like a world beater. Came in 3-0, just tearing it up. And then his last two times out he's ran into some problems. Ilia Topuria, who's looking like the premier unranked prospect right now in the 145-pound division. You know, I can't knock him too much for that loss. And then he went against Sungwoo Choi his last time out. Choi, really good striker. So, you know, I just feel like a couple of Zalal's, you know, his weakest points of his game were kind of exposed in his last two fights. But you got to say, when you watch Youssef Zalal, a lot of volume. Maybe not his last time out, but he does use a lot of volume, and he has great cardio for the most part. He can just keep going the entire 5 minutes for all three rounds. So you like to see that, especially against a guy like Sean Woodson, who, I mean, started out his career 7-0, looked really good his last time out for the first round and a half, and then kind of started petering out a little bit, and Julian Arosa took advantage of it and ended up putting him in a darce choke in the third round. And, you know, not to knock Julian Arosa or anything, but, you know, he's not the premier of the division, and Charles Woodson, oh my gosh, shouts out to Michigan. Sean Woodson, the sniper, just kind of started getting a little bit tired and, you know, gave up that darce choke in a weird way. So, you know, it's kind of hard to call this one because Sean Woodson, I do think for the first round and a half, just like last time, will have the advantage. But if he starts getting tired, Youssef Zalal could simply use volume to just come in here and beat him. It's a tough one to call. I do think Sean Woodson's going to have the advantage striking, and Youssef Zalal has really good takedowns. So I think if Zalal's working the takedown, this one could easily go three rounds where Zalal sneaks out a decision. And if Sean Woodson's able to, you know, stuff a couple of those takedowns, use his range, I mean, this guy's 6'2 in the 145-pound division, so obviously he's going to have the height advantage over pretty much anybody fighting at 145. If he can live up to the moniker of the sniper and just stop the takedowns, stay on the outside, and use that slick striking he has, he can win this one. I do think that's what happens. Me and Slim are agreeing on this one. We're both going with Sean the Sniper Woodson to defeat Yusef Zalal. Right now, let me get the odds on this one for you guys. Yusef Zalal is the underdog. Sean Woodson's the minus 190 favorite over the plus 150 Yusef Zalal. So A&A MMA agreeing on that one as well. Let's go ahead and move on to the next fight, which will be taking place in the 125-pound women's flyweight division. We have France's Manon Fiorot taking on newcomer Brazil's Tabitha Ricci. We'll start with Manon Fiorot because, I got to say, man, there's a lot of prospects on this card that I think could be champions one day. Of all of them, I think Manon Fiorot probably has the best chance. A young 31 years old, 5'7", 66-inch reach. This girl, man, lost her very first fight of her career, which was against Leah McCourt, who's a very marketable fighter. That's all I'm going to say about that split decision loss. And Leah McCourt has gone on to do great things in Bellator. So, that's not a loss you can be too mad at in your debut. Since then, though, Manon Fiorot has just been absolutely tearing everybody she faces up. I mean, when you watch her fight, she is such a fierce striker. I mean, the strikes are so fast, so accurate, just come in flurries. Her last time out, her UFC debut, knocked out Victoria Leonardo with a standing TKO via head kick and punches. It was just an unbelievable performance and really got me on her hype train. I might be a little bit wild for saying this, and I maybe deserve a little bit of flack for saying this. I think Manon Fiorot, at her best, maybe she comes in here and wins another 3-4 fights, gets some really good experience, and gets to the top of the division. I think her ceiling is Valentina Shevchenko. That's how good I think she can be. If she keeps working on her obviously Valentina has better grappling, but Manon Fiorot, I would make the argument her striking is right there right now. Like, maybe a little bit under Shevchenko's and could improve to be as good. And if she keeps working on that grappling, man, she's going to be right up there just like Valentina. That's how good I think Manon Fiorot is. But her opponent coming in, just a lot of unknowns with Tabitha Ricci. 5-0 so far, undefeated, 26 years old. 5'1", 6'2", 62-inch reach. So she's got a record right now of 5-0, like I said. But her opponent's records, which, me and Slim put a good amount of stock into, 0-0, 1-2-1, 0-0, 1-5, 2-3. She's never beaten a fighter with a winning record. That worries me about Tabitha Ricci. She did fight her last three fights in LFA, which of course we know is a really, really good promotion to be in coming into the UFC, but just still hasn't fought that level of competition of anyone who is even almost a champion level on the a champion skill set on the regional level, let alone somebody who I think has possible championship aspirations in the UFC. This is my favorite pick of the night. She's the biggest favorite on the card. This one's a guarantee for me. Manon Fiorot, minus 500. Yes, sir. I know that's high, but she's still going on my parlay. Which, shout out to Luck Changers. If you guys want to hear Monty's parlay of the day, I got it over there on Luck Changers. So if you need a little bit of a more betting perspective on these fights, go check out Luck Changers, where I got the featured spot this week. It was just me, so go check that out, guys. But A&A MMA going to agree on this one. We're both going with Manon Fiorot. She is the favorite in this one, like I said, by minus 500, but you can get Tabitha Ricci at plus 350. We now move from the women's flyweight division up to the 155-pound lightweight division. A banger of a fight right here. It's Alan Patrick, the Brazilian, coming in facing Wales, Mason Jones. There was some talk that this fight was going to be at 170, but it seems now that it's going to be at 155, lightweight. So, starting here with Alan Patrick, the Brazilian, coming in with a record of 15-3, 37 years old, 5'11", with a 74-inch reach. He's lost his last two times out against Bobby Green and Scott Holtzman, but he was on a three-fight winning streak before that. You know, he's kind of had a little bit of a mixed bag since he's came into the UFC, but nonetheless, he's, you know, got a 5-3 record in the UFC. It's not too bad, and he's faced really good competition, which is always good. But, man, this guy, Mason Jones, from what I've seen, of course, his last time out was his UFC debut when he took on Mike Davis in a fight of the night. This guy's got really good boxing, and then if you go and check him out on his Instagram, he is now training with Team Alpha Male. So you know he's been getting some looks on the wrestling mat as well. I think Mason Jones, man, the sky's the limit for this kid. 26 years old, 5'10", with a 72-inch reach. Like I said, he lost that debut, but he was undefeated before that at 10-0 with most of his wins via knockout, or at least stoppage. A champ in Cage Warriors, which nobody did that since Connor. This guy, Mason Jones, man, I'm telling you guys, when you watch him, this kid's the real deal. He really is. He might have got a little bit too in a little bit too deep with that Mike Davis fight for his first one, because we know Mike Davis is just an absolute killer, man. But that was one of those fights where I could see these guys meeting up again down in their career after they both go on such long win streaks. I think Mason Jones starts right here, and Slim's going to agree with me. We're both going with the Welshman, Mason Jones, who you can get right now at -305 over the +230, Alan Patrick. It's going to be a fun fight, guys. Make sure you're in your seats watching that one. Let's go ahead and move to the 170-pound welterweight division. Making his welterweight debut, Brazil's Francisco Trinaldo taking on Russia's Muslim Salikov. We'll start with Trinaldo, coming in with a 26-7 record, 42 years old, 5'9", with a 70-inch reach. He has been tearing it up as of late. Within the last 3 years, he's gone 3-0. He beat Jai Herbert his last time out in an absolute mauling. Beat John McDessie, beat Bobby Green. Those are three quality wins. He also lost to Alexander Hernandez, but, you know, watching that fight, it was a lot closer than the unanimous decision implies. If he would have got that one, he's, you know, 5-0 in his last five, kind of grooving right now. Just seems like Francisco Trinaldo is one of those guys that ages like wine, man. The older he gets, the better he gets. And, I mean, he seems to just be, like, really hitting a good stride in his career. He's made a lot of changes. He's really good at getting inside and using his striking, like, his technical boxing skills. I mean, this guy at 42 years old still carries some serious power in his hands. But when you look on the other side, Muslim Salikov is just the definition of fun to watch. The king of kung fu coming in here. That sounded weird. The king of kung fu coming in here with a 4-0 record in his last four fights. Of course, he lost his debut against Alex Garcia, but since then, just been on an absolute tear. Got quality wins over Melvin Gallard outside of the UFC as well. So, I mean, he's been fighting good competition for a while now, and he just brings one of those really fun striking styles. A lot of spinning attacks to the body, really good leg kicks. He can go up high, throws punches really well. I mean, he's beaten the likes of Ricky Rainey, Nordine Taleb, Lauriano Staropoli, and obviously his biggest win yet, last time out against Alizo Zaleski dos Santos, which you can argue that Zaleski dos Santos won that one, but, you know, that's neither here nor there. Muslim Salikov, just a outstanding striker. I think the key for him in this one's going to be his takedown defense. If Trinaldo's able to get that takedown and, you know, put Salikov on his back, that's where Trinaldo is going to have a big advantage in this fight. So I think Trinaldo is going to have to use that boxing to get in range and set up his takedowns well. And as for Salikov, use those fun kicks that you use. Use some spinning kicks to the body. Really try to beat up that body of Trinaldo, because I feel like, you know, fighting in a new weight division, 42 years old, you know, maybe Trinaldo might be carrying a little bit more weight than he's used to. If he starts getting that body beat up, you know, he could gas out pretty quick. So I think that's going to be the key for Salikov. This one's pretty tough to call. Right now, Salikov is sitting as the minus 250 favorite over the plus 195 Francisco Trinaldo. A&A MMA going to agree on this one. We're both going with Muslim Salikov to defeat Francisco Trinaldo. All right. Let me go ahead and get this next one on my screen for you guys. Sorry the transitions aren't very smooth. It's just hard by yourself, man. It's just hard by yourself. Let's go ahead and get into this next one, though. The first heavyweight of fight of three on the night, and probably the weirdest one of all the fights on the card. We have Tanner Boser taking on Ilir Latifi. We'll start with the bulldozer, Tanner Boser. The Canadian, 29 years old, 6'2", with a 75-inch reach. There we go. So last time we saw him was probably his worst, well, definitely his worst performance yet in the UFC. Lost to Arlovsky, but we know Arlovsky is just one of those crafty veterans who can sneak out wins somehow, even at his old age. But despite that, his only other loss in the UFC, Tanner Boser, was Cyril Gane when they were both kind of coming up the ranks there. That was back in 2019. He went on a two-fight winning streak after that. And he's made a lot of improvements in his game. I used to say Tanner Boser, you know, when he first came in the UFC, but kind of like slow, prodding forward type style. And now the footwork's really good when you watch him. I still don't think he necessarily carries that power that most heavyweights have in their hands, but he uses his leg kicks really well. And when he does throw combinations, that's when he does his best work. So I think that's going to be a key for Tanner Boser. He's going to have to keep this one clean, because if he allows a guy like Ilir Latifi to close that distance, and we know what Ilir Latifi does best, it's go for the takedowns. If he allows that, he could be in a world of trouble, man. Ilir Latifi, the Swedish fighter, 37 years old, coming in with a record of 14-8. 5'10", just super small for the division, 75-inch reach. He's just not looked good, man. In his last three fights, he's lost. His last time out was his return to heavyweight, in which he lost to Derek Lewis. And for whatever reason, he thought he won that one. It was definitely 29-28. Volkan Ozdemir and Corey Anderson. Of course, all three of those guys are ranked in their respective divisions. Corey Anderson now in Bellator, but, you know, he was ranked before he left. And then before that, Latifi had wins over St. Preux and Tyson Pedro. So he's got really good quality wins on his record. Just really hasn't been in the best form as of late. You know, he's 37 now. Maybe that is just catching up to him. Obviously, the weight cuts were getting harder. That's why he's back up at heavyweight. And, you know, maybe this just isn't the right division for him. But this one's just going to be really interesting, because if Latifi can come out, I just see this fight going two ways. Latifi comes out, gets the takedown, just stays on top for two rounds, and then plays the third round safe, kind of on his back foot, maybe shoots for a couple takedowns again. But nonetheless, you know, tries getting that 29-28, 30-27 type scorecard. On the other side, Tanner Boser, if he can stuff those first, you know, 1, 2, 3 takedowns that Latifi throws at him, oh man, I feel like Latifi's going to be in a world of trouble, because Tanner Boser is going to be smart enough to stay on the outside, start abusing that leg with those leg kicks, and kind of pick him apart. So that's why I think this one's just so tough to call, man. I'm going to go with Boser, I guess. Not very confident on that pick whatsoever, but But ANA MMA, going to agree on that one. We're both going with Tanner Boser to defeat Ilir Latifi. Right now, you can get Tanner Boser as the minus... Give me 1 second. Find that guy. -200 favorite over the +160, Ilir Latifi. Latifi definitely live underdog in that one, though. All right, let's go ahead and get on into this next one. All right, so we move from the heavyweights now down to the women's flyweight. We have Montana De La Rosa, the American, taking on Ariane Lipsky, the Queen of Violence, coming in with a record of 13-6. We'll start with the American. Montana De La Rosa comes in with a record of 11-6-1. 26 years old, 5'7", with a 68-inch reach, fighting out of Texas down there. She lives in Texas. She trains out of Elevation Fight Team. Kind of just on and off so far in her UFC career. You know, once she came in from the Ultimate Fighter, she was on a 3-fight win streak, ran into Andrea Lee, beat Mara Barella, and then her last two times out, she lost to Vivi Araujo, where she just got destroyed in that fight. And then her last time out, it was a majority decision against Myra Buena Silva, which she got busted up in that one too. So, you know, Montana De La Rosa, her striking, definitely not the best. She does her best work on the ground. She has a lot of different submissions she can use, and she was a state champion wrestler as well. So, you know, the grappling is her strong suit, and that's exactly the same thing with Ariane Lipsky. I mean, Lipsky probably will have the striking advantage here just because she has more power, but Lipsky, you know, does a lot of her good work on the ground too. But the Queen of Violence coming in with that record of 13-6, 27 years old, 5'6" with a 67 inch reach. Her last time out, it's just so, this is why I hate when Antonina Shevchenko's on your record, because you either out grappled Antonina Shevchenko and you're an outstanding grappler and just dominated her, or I thought you were a good grappler, and then you went and fought her, and you lost via ground and pound because you couldn't get her off you. Just super confusing, but Ariane Lipsky, just kind of a mixed bag since she's been in the UFC. When she came in, fought JoJo Calderwood. All right, JoJo fought for a belt. Molly McCann lost to her, and then she beat Isabella de Padua and Luana Carolina via that nasty knee bar. Last time out, lost to Antonina Shevchenko. But both these ladies do the same things very well. I feel like De La Rosa will probably use a little bit more volume with the striking, whereas Lipsky throws with that power that can actually knock you out at 125 in the women's flyweight division. But Lipsky also has really good submissions herself. So this one's going to be a tough one to call, man. I don't know why Montana De La Rosa is the second biggest favorite on the card. I couldn't tell you, but she is nonetheless. This one's tough to call, man. This is a tough fight to call. Ariane Lipsky, I'd say she probably has the more well-rounded skill set of these two fighters, but I do expect this fight to take place on the ground, where I think Montana De La Rosa will have an advantage because she has the submissions herself. She's been submitted before, don't get me wrong, but she has that wrestling base as well. I just think this one goes to the ground in Montana for the most part, and that's where Montana De La Rosa is going to have just the slightest of advantages, man. This one has like split decision 29-28 type fight written all over it. Some weird scorecards. This one's just tough to call. But we got our first disagreement of the night. Slim's going with Ariane Lipsky. And, you know, I think like every time he picks her, he gets it right. Like, that's just one of Slim's fighters that he always gets right, so that worries me. But I'm going with Montana De La Rosa, man. We'll fire up the disagreement train. All right, let's go ahead and get on to this next one. Also, don't turn me off just because I said choo-choo after that. Come on, give me a break. I'm talking to myself here. Just did luck changers. I've been talking to myself for like 2 hours, bro. Jeez. So I don't know if the last one I previewed the featured preliminary bout or this one is, but one of the two will be. I can tell you that. But we'll go with this one for now. The featured preliminary bout. In the 145-pound featherweight division, Makwan Amirkani, Finland's own, taking on the American Kamuela Kirk. We'll start with Mr. Finland himself, Makwan Amirkani, coming in with a record of 16-5, 32 years old now, 5'10" with a 72-inch reach. This guy has just fought the best of the best, and honestly, his only losses in the UFC are to the best of the best. He lost to Edson Barbosa, all right, understandable, especially how good Barbosa has been as of late. I think that was Barbosa's last fight at, his first fight at featherweight. He beat Danny Henry. He lost to Shane Burgos. And then, before that, had that crazy win with an anaconda choke over Chris Fishgold, which we know Chris Fishgold is a good grappler. Split decision over Jason Knight, which was just a weird fight. Amirkani did a good job grappling in that one, but he was getting tagged up on the feet. Also has a split decision loss to Arnie Allen. He was on a three-fight win streak before that, though. Mr. Finland, we know what he does best, wrestling. He has an extensive wrestling career, and he translated that pretty well so far in his UFC career. He's going to have to get this one on the ground because Kamuela Kirk just has that power in his hands at 145. He's a brawler like most Hawaiians are. I think Amirkani is going to have to come in here and do what he usually does best, which is close that distance real quick and shoot those takedowns. And we know Amirkani is one of those guys that if he, gets stuffed once or twice, it doesn't matter. He's not going to abandon the takedown. He's going to keep going and going until he gets that takedown. So we'll see how that kind of weighs on his cardio and if Kamuela Kirk can shut a couple of those down. But the Jawaian, Kamuela Kirk, 27 years old, coming in with a record of 11-4, 5'10", with a 75-inch reach. He's won his last two fights. Last time made Daniel Swain quit after the second round. We remember back in the Contender Series, which is like the first time we saw Kamuela Kirk, lost to Billy Q. We've seen what Billy Q's gone on to do so far in his UFC career. But so far Kamuela Kirk, from what I've seen, really impressive. Always down for a fun brawl. Really good grappling. And like I said, if it's on the feet and you're trying to throw him, he's there to throw him. I think this one's just, it's tough to call. But Amirkani, with the experience he's had against the top of the division, I just think that's a little bit of a game changer against a guy who's making his UFC debut. So I got to go with Makwan Amirkani in this one. Slim agrees. ANA MMA agreeing. Going with the minus 230 favorite, Makwan Amirkani, over the plus 180 underdog, Kamuela Kirk. All right. Let's go ahead and get into the first fight of this six-fight main card. And ooh, my goodness, this is going to be a fun one, my friends. Let's go ahead and get into it. In the middleweight division, Tom Breese, the Englishman, he'll be taking on, he's taking on the Brazilian Antonio Arroyo. We'll start with England's own Tom Breese, 12-3 overall, 29 years old, 6'3" with a 73.5-inch reach. Last time out, lost to Omari Akhmadov. That was earlier this year, actually. But before that, had that really impressive win over KB Bular where he knocked him out with that jab. The guys that we've seen Tom Breese lose to, Omari Akhmadov, Brendan Allen, Sean Strickland, those are all guys, I believe Brendan Allen's been ranked before, but all those guys have been ranked in their UFC careers. He's got quality wins over the likes of, when he came into the UFC, beat Luis Dutra Jr., Cathal Pendred, Kata Nakamura, Daniel Kelly. He does have those good wins on his record. Tom Breese has shown that talent before, primarily going to be using his striking. He has really good boxing skills, but, his opponent, we know what he's trying to do. He'll get this one to the ground and try to get the submission. It's Antonio Arroyo. Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, coming in with a record of 9-4, 31 years old, 6'3" with a 73.5-inch reach. His, you know, he came in with that hype coming off the Contender Series where he won by arm triangle choke, but since then, two straight decision losses to Andre Muniz and Darren Wynn. Just kind of hasn't lived up to that hype he had coming in. But, you know, this guy is just dangerous, man. He's got really powerful strikes, and he has a really good arm triangle choke. That's like his specialty choke that he uses mostly. Antonio Arroyo, I just hope he hits that breakthrough soon, man, because this, if he loses this one, he might get the boot. So that kind of gives it a little bit of a different dynamic here in this fight. You know, if you're fighting for your life and your well-being, you know, kind of puts a little bit of an extra fire under your ass. So we'll see what Antonio brings. But ANA MMA going to agree on this one. We're both going with Tom Breese to defeat Antonio Arroyo. Right now, Tom Breese is sitting as the minus 250 favorite over the plus 195 Antonio Arroyo. ANA MMA, a lot of agreements tonight. Let's see if we get another one here in this next one, which, oh my goodness, I can't wait for this one because I just feel like somebody is going night-night. In the middleweight division, it's Dusko Todorovic, Serbia's own, taking on the Brazilian Gregory Rodriguez. We'll start with Dusko Todorovic, coming in with a record of 10-1, 27 years old, 6'1", with a 73-inch reach. 74-inch reach. Last time out, fought Punahele Soriano, lost via first-round knockout. So when you watch Dusko Todorovic, you see a lot of power. I mean, he's got quick first-round knockouts littered across his record. He beat Daquan Townsend in the UFC with ground and pound in the second round. But, I mean, his striking defense is just non-existent, to put it lightly. I mean, he does not defend strikes coming back at him very well, doesn't use very much head movement. He's got decent lateral movement, but that's kind of all he has in terms of striking defense, which is going to really, really worry me, because this guy, Gregory Rodriguez, if you remember, he fought in the Contender Series, fought Jordan Williams and got knocked out in the first round. So obviously he has a little bit of a deficiency with strike defense as well. But Gregory Rodriguez, man, just such a dangerous guy. He throws hooks really well. He won, I think it was his second to last fight against Almatavo, with just a vicious left hook and sat him down. Beat Josh Fremd his last time out in LFA on a card that he headlined. So Gregory Rodriguez, man, this guy, you know, coming in as a LFA middleweight champ, he's something serious. And I don't know if that Contender Series fight was like the best display of what he truly had. So, you know, I'm not going to knock him too much for that first round knockout. I'm kind of giving him a clean slate going into this one. And if he can get a win over Dusko Todorovic, you know, I'm on the Gregory Rodriguez train. I think he might probably have the better skill set, especially if it goes to the ground, but I expect this one to stay standing. I expect someone to get knocked out after, I think there's going to be a feeling out process between these two, because Todorovic just lost his first fight, his last time out, like I said, with being knocked out, you know, he might be a little bit timid, and Rodriguez might understand he's got a dangerous striker on his hand, might not want to rush in too quick. I could see this one being a feeling out process for 2-3 minutes before these guys get swinging. But I do think they get swinging. I think it's a fun one. I wish I didn't have to pick this one, but yeah, I'm going to go with Dusko Todorovic, me and Slim. He's a minus 150 favorite over the plus 120 Gregory Rodriguez. Let's go ahead and move on to this next bout in the 170-pound middleweight division. Possible fight of the night candidate right here, you guys. It's going to be a scrap. It's Santiago Ponzinibbio, Argentina's own, taking on the USA's Miguel Baeza. We'll start with Ponzinibbio, the perennial top 15 fighter. 34 years old. Oh, I'm sorry. Comes in with a record of 27-4. 34 years old. 6 foot with a 73-inch reach. Last time out was his comeback fight after a three-year layoff when he took on Li Jinglang. The Leech ended up knocking him out in a round. So, you know, ring rust is a thing. Did he get over it, or did he lose a lot of valuable time with that those three years off, you know? So, but before that, man, Santiago Ponzinibbio just absolutely tearing it up. He only had two losses in the UFC before that. Has wins over the likes of Sean Strickland, Court McGee, Zach Cummings, Nordine Taleb, Gunny Nelson, Mike Perry, Neil Magny. I mean, he's beaten some really, really good fighters. I'm just worried, you know, maybe he lost a step or two, really, when he took that time off. And he's got a young, hungry, up-and-comer he's got to face this Saturday. It's Miguel Baeza, Caramel Thunder, 10-0, 28 years old, 6'2", with a 74.5-inch reach. I mean, nobody's really been able to even touch this guy so far. He's fought good guys outside of the UFC. Victor Reyna, he beat Hector Aldana in his UFC debut. Beat Matt Brown, who we know, good grappler. Well, knocked him out with a left hook. Beat Takashi Sato last time out. We know he's a good striker. Well, beat him with an arm triangle. So Miguel Baeza can just kind of do, like, he takes whatever your weakness is, and that's what he's good at. Because he can do pretty much everything and do it well. I think Miguel Baeza does have championship potential. I think this kid could really be the cream of the crop in the division one day. He just mixes it up so well. Really good high kicks, good submissions. Like, anywhere the fight goes, he is right there. And he's one of only 11 fighters in UFC history to have a knockout stemming from leg kicks, which he did back on UFC on ESPN Plus 19. So, man, this one's going to be fun. I'm telling you guys, it's going to be a great fight. I'm super, super excited for this one. I think it could be fight of the night, but A&A MMA going to agree on this one. We're both going with Miguel Baeza to defeat Santiago Ponzinibbio, or as Slim likes to say, Santiago Ponzinibbius, or whatever. All right, let's go ahead and get on to this next fight, you guys. We only got three more previews for you here before I wrap up the episode for us. But in the 185-pound middleweight division, we have Georgia's own Roman Delije taking on the Argentinian Laureano Staropoli. We'll start with Roman Delije. Man, when he first came into the UFC, I thought this guy was, you know, going to absolutely dominate. He's got the full sweater of chest hair. Like, dude just looks like a badass. But he's 8-1 now, 32 years old, 6'2", with a 76-inch reach. Last time out was his first loss of his career against Trevin Giles. And hey, Trevin Giles is a great fighter. I do think he's a possible top 15 type contender there in the middleweight division. But the fight before that was a split decision win over John Allen, which kind of hits me worse than the loss to Trevin Giles, because I don't think you should be getting split decisions over John Allen. Nonetheless, he's 2-1 so far in his UFC career. Roman Delije uses his grappling really well. I mean, he's the type of guy that's going to try getting you to the ground. He's got really unorthodox submissions. He's won with rear naked chokes. But his favorite is a heel hook, which, hear me out here, we could possibly see in this one. But he's got spinning back fist knockouts. He's got really powerful punches. I think Delije is going to have to get this one done early. I think it's another one of the fights where he's going to have to, where the guy is going to have to come out and empty the gas tank kind of early if he wants to get the stoppage. But, you know, Laureano Staropoli is kind of the same way. Like, he does his better work in the earlier parts of the rounds. But he came in, his first eight fights of his career all ended by stoppage. His last four all have ended by decision. So I do think this one goes over 2.5 rounds on the betting side. But let's get into Staropoli here. He's lost his last two times out against Tim Means and Muslim Salikov, both by unanimous decision. So he hasn't won since May 11th of 2019. Staropoli, just kind of a mixed bag, man. He started out 2-0, beat Hector Aldana and Thiago Alves, and then lost to Salikov and Tim Means. So you kind of never know what you're going to get out of Staropoli. He's a good grappler with tricky submissions. He uses his straight left as his best punch. I do think he has a chance in this one, but I'm pretty confident in picking Roman Delije. Slim agrees with me. We're both going with the Georgian, Roman Delige, who is the minus 150 favorite over the plus 130? I'm sorry, plus 120 Laureano Staropoli. Let's get into this co-main event of the evening. We got two straight heavyweight bouts in a row for you guys. The co-main event of the evening, the American, Walt Harris, 13-9, taking on Poland's Marcin Tybura, 21-6. Walt Harris, the big ticket, one of the guys you just love to cheer for in the sport, 37 years old, 6'5", 81-inch reach. He's lost his last two times out against Alexander Volkov and Alistair Overeem, which we know top 15 staples in the division, even though Overeem's gone now. But before that, man, knocked out Alexei Olenek in 12 seconds, knocked out Sergei Spivak in 50 seconds, had a split no contest with Andrei Arlovsky, beat Daniel Spitz via knockout. I mean, Walt Harris carries game-changing power. I mean, he's one of those long, kind of lanky type heavyweights, and he's got such a long left arm that he pokes out there with, like, I mean, his uppercuts cover distance. It's wild. So I think Walt Harris has to stop the takedown. If he cannot stop the takedown, he is in a world of trouble. If he can stuff, you know, the first three takedowns Marcin throws at him, we got a whole different ball game, because I do think Walt Harris has a way bigger power advantage. He's got the reach advantage. He's going to have to use it. But his opponent, Marcin Tybura, the Polish fighter, 21-6 overall, 35 years old, 6'3" with a 78-inch reach. Just been on a tear, man, ever since he had that kind of embarrassing less than a minute knockout loss to Augusto Sakai. This guy's been on a four-fight win streak. He beat Sergei Spivak. He beat Maxim Grishin. He beat Ben Rothwell. And then he stopped Greg Hardy. We know what Marcin Tybura does best. Gets the takedown. Uses his ground and pound. He's got submissions as well. But for the most part, he's going to be taking you down all three rounds, trying to get the unanimous decision. I think he's just the one who's got the clearest path to victory in this one. I think I haven't really seen too much fantastic takedown defense out of Walt Harris. I watched Alistair Overeem take him down several times, so I know that Tybura will probably be able to take him down at least several times in this one. I'm expecting a 30-27 type scorecard in this one. Tybura just uses a lot of wrestling and ground and pound. Might get a stoppage, but I'm just expecting Tybura to take this one into deep water and, you know, use that clear wrestling advantage that he's going to carry into this bout. A&A MMA going to agree on this one. We're both going with Marcin Tybura to defeat Walt Harris. Let's go ahead and get into this main event, guys. In the heavyweight division, it's Suriname's own Jairzinho Rozenstruik taking on Brazil's Augusto Sakai. Let's start with Biggie Boy coming in with a record of 11-2, 33 years old, 6'4" with a 78-inch reach. Last time Rozenstruik was out, got just completely dominated by Cyril Gane. Gane beat him every single round in that fight. We saw him get knocked out in 20 seconds by Francis Ngannou. But other than that, he's had a really good run. Now, before I get into that, he beat Junior Dos Santos as his last win. But his win before that was against Alistair Overeem in a fight that he was very, very clearly losing. And threw up the prayer with 4 seconds left and got the knockout, punching Alistair Overeem's lip off. You know, a win's a win, but he was losing that entire fight. He was 4 seconds away from taking home the L. He would be 1-3 in his last four fights if that had happened. And his three fights before that in UFC were all less than, you know, very quick knockouts and less than 2.5 rounds at least. So, with that being said, Rozenstruik, you know, he's going to have the clear power advantage in this fight, but he's going to have to use it, and he's going to have to be creative with his entrances when he decides to throw his punches. He's going to have to use his leg kicks. I think the leg kick will be the biggest key in this one, and he's going to have to establish that great jab that he has. I think Biggie Boy needs to kind of take a use his kickboxing experience, his extensive kickboxing experience in this fight. Because I don't see Sakai taking this one to the ground. Sakai is typically a striker too. So I'd like to see Biggie Boy try to conserve a lot of energy in this one. And don't just throw that big punch. Set it up. And if he can do that, Jairzinho Rozenstruik can walk away with a victory. But Augusto Sakai, man, this guy just has a lot of really good intangible skills. His last time out, he lost to Alistair Overeem as well. And that was also in the fifth round. Well, I didn't mean lose to him as well. He lost to him. But that was in the fifth round. He beat Blagoj Ivanov via split decision, beat Marcin Tybura with a 59-second knockout, and then beat Andrei Arlovsky and Chase Sherman. So, you know, that's a great UFC record right there. He's on a 4-1 run so far, but two of the wins by split decision. It's such a fun matchup. It really is. This is a really good matchup, but Sakai doesn't carry into this fight that game-changing power that I think Rozenstruik has. I think Sakai's approach to this one is going to have to be like, definitely don't wear yourself out early. And I think Sakai only had one main event, if I'm not mistaken, in his career. Let me confirm that with myself. Okay, yeah. He's only had one main event so far in his career. So I'm going to have to see some energy conservation out of Sakai. But, you know, he's got what it takes. He really does to pull this off. But ANA MMA agreeing on this main event. We're both going with Jairzinho Rozenstruik to defeat Augusto Sakai. We're both going with Biggie Boy. Like I said, leg kicks and jabs. Going to be huge for Jairzinho. So, yep, that's your guys' official preview for UFC Fight Night. What are they calling this one? UFC Fight Night 189 or UFC on ESPN Plus 47. Or, as we'll be using the hashtag, UFC Vegas 28. Speaking of hashtags, make sure you guys follow us on Twitter, A&A MMA. It's the letter A, the word and, the letter A underscore MMA. Come kick it with us on fight night. I always got previews, round by round coverage, all that good stuff. So make sure you guys follow us on there. If you'd like to donate to our Patreon, that's always appreciated too. You can find us at patreon.com/A_A_MMA. Go check out Luck Changers. Like I said, I got the main spot on their episode this weekend, so it's just me giving a betting perspective on this fight card. Go check that out. And other than that, you know, I hope you guys really enjoy this card. I hope you have a good weekend. Shout out to my mans right here, Spyro, who's just been napping for like 3 hours straight. I think he's alive. Can't confirm, though. Other than that, yo, hope you guys have a good weekend, like I said. And Slim will be back next week. We'll be back in full force for you guys, previewing the second half of the PFL. Super hyped about that one. And then, of course, UFC 263. Oh, my goodness. Two title belts. Diaz versus Edwards. Oh, my gosh. It's going to be a fun one, guys. Oh, and also, that's a five-round fight as well, so... Oh, just can't wait. Fun week of fights coming up for us next week, but I put this one out to hold you guys over. Hope you enjoyed it, and we'll check you out next week, y'all. Peace!